Nils.
Timmann.
Stefan.
Stefan. So, we have a guest tonight.
We have a guest.
Stefan, you're an expert on wearable computing, right?
Yes, I think so, yeah.
To bring us all on the same page, something I wondered, what is wearable computing?
So, what's wearable computing? Wearable computing is basically if you put computers on the body of the human. And that's how everything started. People thought, oh, I want to have my computer with me all the time, and they put it on themselves.
I thought about it, and I found it quite confusing, because if you look at other device classes, so you look at the desktop computers, and you know how people interact with them, you know where they are, and like there's a pointing device, there's a keyboard, there's a screen, and you sit on a desk. And for smartphones, you have a touch screen, you have them in your hand, and so you combine screen input and output in one place. But if you go for wearable computing, it's all over the place. So there's not a consistent device factor. So I wonder, is this definition even useful?
There's always a huge overlap. If you put your mobile phone in one of these arm thingies, if you go running, for example, it becomes sort of a wearable at the same point. So it's perhaps not entirely useful, but I think it's what it is. There's no other way to describe it.
So I think from a technical point of view, it might make sense, but then my impression is from an HCI perspective, you should probably consider these different form factors, what are the promising form factors?
In industry, it's basically all about the wrist. Smart bracelets, smart watches, and so on, and very few head-mounted devices. But that's basically it. There are some single products like smart shirts, but with very limited functionality and way behind what's available in research.
Do they provide anything to us that smartphones cannot provide?
Yes, of course. That's, I think, the interesting aspects on wearable computing, that they enable new sensing modalities that provide new information on the user that other devices simply cannot, because they have the proximity to the body that enables the sensing in the end. And also on the output side, they are able to provide different types of output that smartphones and desktop computers simply cannot do.
What would be examples for that?
So, for example, you can provide vibrotactile output on specific parts of the body. You can have sensing on a physiological level, for example, heart rate, breathing rate, and so on, which is not very easy by mobile phone.
The definition of wearing your computer with you, right, that would include systems such as a laptop device or an iPad or any tablet, really, to fall under that category. Is that how these devices kind of like came about, or where do you see the transition between, you know, the stationary mainframe personal computers, and then how did, you know, wearable computing really start, and with which device era?
So to me, it's in the ubiquitous computing area, because, in the end, the difference between putting a sensor on the user or somehow on a gadget he uses is not that different in the end, right? I mean, they have to be small, they have to fulfill different criteria that are sort of at least overlapping between Ubicom and wearable computing. Of course, in the wearable environments, they have to fulfill more criteria. There's a great paper from end of the 90s that looks into different guidelines for wearability some of them at least not necessary for Ubicom devices, but there's of course an overlap.
So you put these things on a continuum. On the one end, you have something like a desktop computer or even bigger computers, then you have smartphones, then you have wearables. Is that then the next step? And then you have things that are implanted, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Insertables.
Insertables, implantables, yeah.
So would a pacemaker then fall into wearable computing?
Well, if you include all implantables as wearables, yes. But yeah, to me, wearables imply that you can get rid of them on your own. So perhaps it's one step further. But what both categories have in common is that I think as soon as you go to Ubicom, and that's perhaps the most important difference from an HCI perspective to desktop and mobile computing, that you not necessarily have all the interaction capabilities in the same device. So you might have wearables that just provide output or just provide input to the system, but does not do both. So it's entirely useless on its own. So you need another device to sort of interact with it properly.
Mm-hmm. Or a network of devices.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's an interesting aspect because I believe that there's this niche that you have between something like a mobile phone or a smartphone that you can carry it around. So I don't know, I would probably call this class carryable devices. And on the other hand, you have things that go into your body. And my impression is that this niche is super small. So there are some people, for them, it's useful. Like if you have diabetes, then you want to have something like that, right? That makes a lot of sense. Now you would prefer that it's inside your body.
But why do you want to have that device? Because, so at least if I'm not an expert in that, but I would assume that you want to have such a device implanted because you don't want to forget the device.
But you don't interact with them. I think that is, yeah. So they're in your body and you don't interact with them. If I want to interact, I find smartphones extremely convenient because I can decide if I want to interact with them or not. I can put them on a table, I can put them face down, and then they're gone. For wearable computers, they're on my body, so it's much more of a hassle to put them on, put them off, compared to something like a smartphone. And then, on top of that, they're not as powerful. So they have this limitation in terms of when can I interact with them, and allowing me to decide that. And then, on top of that, well, they don't even provide the same functionality as a smartphone.
On the one hand, I think you have to differentiate implicit and explicit interaction. So wearables are not, or at least not all of them, made for explicit interaction, which does not mean that it's less useful, right? I mean, you don't need, a smartwatch to watch your YouTube episodes here, right? I mean, that's not perhaps the goal when you design a smartwatch. So there might be different application scenarios that are tackled by wearables compared to mobile phones. And that's why mobile phones still exist, right? Because it doesn't make sense to make the screen even smaller because then you cannot see anything. It's a perfect screen size at the moment. That's why people love it. So it's somehow unfair to say, oh yeah, your implantable cannot show your YouTube video. It sucks. I mean, that's obviously stupid. And the second point would be, of course, putting on is an issue, but there's particularly work in smart textiles that tries to tackle that by using everyday textiles, clothing, to gain smart functionalities that basically allows the user to behave normally, so you might not forget to wear your pants when you leave your house, right? And it's not a hassle for you to put them on, I hope. And so if these everyday clothing gets smart, then putting on wearables is not like an additional effort anymore.
No, I was more thinking about putting them off. So I, for my smartphone.
Why do you want to do that?
I do that with my smartphone and I don't put it off, but I put it somewhere. Like deliberately, I have dinner and then I put it somewhere and I don't look at it. I remember I once talked with Seth Stana, and I'm not sure if you experienced similar things. When you talk with him, he wears Google Glass or a similar device. And then he's always, he's always looking somewhere to the upper left with one eye, and you never know what is he actually doing. Is he playing a game on his Google Glass variation? Or is he, I don't know, reading his emails, and then he's typing all the time? And or is he taking notes about our conversation? What is he actually doing? And I compare that to WeTalk, and I'm on my phone constantly, I look at the screen and I type. That would be super annoying for phones. And I found it rather annoying also for like this type of variable.
Yeah, but I think that's basically that type of wearable that has a full interaction capability similar to a phone integrated. And I think that's just a part of the wearables. And to me, at least, the interesting ones are the ones that do not offer that capability. The very specialized devices that provide the function basically that can be used with a mobile phone. And so if you have, for example, a t-shirt that tracks your heart rate, there's no need to take it off during dinner. It will not annoy you, it will not bother you, you will wear it like a regular t-shirt. And I think that's the true power of wearables, because then you have the information 24/7 and have like a long-term assessment of, in this example, physiological data that might provide a lot of information, particularly to doctors or something like that, on your health.
I think the reason why you were kind of off-put by the experience has a lot to do with the interaction, even though it's not as explicit, it's still in your field of perception, right? So you still kind of perceived that person to be interacting with something else. So the interaction wasn't subtle enough, in a sense, right? But if we could probably design a system that is so implicit that your conversation partner wouldn't notice you interacting with it, would it still bother you? So maybe we are, in a sense, in a kind of uncanny valley of variables right now, where before it gets completely absorbed by either our clothing or our environment, we perceive still these elements as quite annoying or distracting.
I think what's problematic, and there's people are doing research in that direction, hiding the interaction. I think that is really strange. Like, I interact with them, with these devices, but you design the interaction in a way that other people don't notice that I do that. And I don't think this is the way forward. Because I will know that you have that device, and I will know that there is the possibility that you interact with that. And even just knowing that you might do that or not, just as said Stana, maybe he was doing a very reasonable thing, doing things that were related to our conversation, maybe not. And not knowing that, I think that was my problem with it.
But it's not about the interaction itself, it's more about the focus on your discussion with him, right? I mean, so if you would do something that does not require any cognitive capabilities and it would be entirely focused on your discussion, it would probably be fine to you, right?
Yeah, that's probably true. I think it's about attention, how much attention is taken away from the conversation partner through these devices.
Yeah.
And how much do they know about it? I think it's better, like if I do something on my phone and you see that, so the other person sees what I'm doing and it's related to our conversation. I think that is acceptable in a way. If I do play a game, if I play Candy Crush while I don't know, talk with you, that's probably not acceptable. And if you see that, what I'm doing, I think then it's better. And maybe that's difficult for things like smart glasses, because it's hard to show what the other person is doing.
So could we introduce an element of deception? So let's say I am engaged in some secondary task and I show you something completely different. Would that work?
I would know that. Know that this type of thing exists, that people do that. And then I think that would ruin the form factor if you have the option to do that.
So there is this display. It's a projector that basically projects pixels to different angles. And so the left side of the room sees one image and the right side of the room sees a completely other image. So coming back to your scenario, you think we're playing Candy Crush, but really, you know, I am, you know, writing that paper that you shouldn't be seeing, or I'm chatting with the person that I prefer talking to at this point in time.
I think that would really put me off if that exists, and I wouldn't like you using that form factor in that situation.
It's what you don't know, Niels.
Yeah, but you would know. I mean, you buy, you know that these devices exist, and then they're, I mean, advertised in that way. I think that doesn't really help too much. But Stefan mentioned things like smart shirts, and I think that's one type of device that's not common yet. I mean, there are some niche applications for that, and that you mentioned that this is an interesting form factor for the future. What would be others beyond? I think the two prominent ones are probably smart glasses and smart watches. And then you mentioned shirts. What other things do you think are promising?
I think there are already some smart shoes out there, or at least sensors you can put in your shoes to get, again, in the health and fitness domain, additional information on the user. It's a really good question because, if I would be sure about that, I would just start a company and get rich. I think it's entirely open in the end, because the main issue with all the variables is that the benefit you get from them at the moment is really limited. And even if you look into the fitness trackers, it's a very big market, I would say. What you get is, the number of steps you made a day. Perhaps at the moment there are some more sensors in there, like heart rate and so on. But in the end, the benefit is really limited. And I think that's the key issue of most wearables, and also the more esoteric ones that explore, I don't know, on your back or chest or something, some interactions. It's nice in a particular use case, but it's not that nice yet that you spend $100 on that. It's more like, for a dollar more, it might be okay, but not like, $100. And that's remind me of, I've been to Las Vegas, and there was the CES show, and one of the Google project Jacquard designer was there and presents the jacket, the Levi's jacket that basically allows swiping on the calf and basically answering phone calls and skipping the next music on your music player. And what he said was, and that's available for only $350. And the room was filled half by computer scientists and half by designers. And they all said, wow. And the computer scientists more like, wow, how can you pay $350 for a jacket? And the designers, only $350 for a jacket. And I think that makes it pretty clear that there is some market, but I think not at the moment in the general public, because it's just too expensive.
If you only sell 1,000 of these jackets, then they cost 300. If you would, I don't know, sell 1 million, then they might be much cheaper.
I'd be 30, yeah.
Yeah.
But if we've seen one thing about price, it's if you just provide enough of a killer app or incentive to buy this, people will go out and, purchase those devices, right? Or these jackets.
But so there is no killer app.
Why don't we have a killer app for that?
Well, I think there is not a single killer app. Mm-hmm. I think it's similar to the mobile phone. You don't buy a mobile phone because you want to use WhatsApp. You buy a mobile phone.
So what do you think is the problem? Is the problem then that people think about wearable computers as the next step, and so therefore they try to kind of translate what we have in applications for our phones and our desktop computers. They try to translate that to our clothing rather than thinking about completely new ways of interacting with our environment?
I think partly yes, partly no, and that's the issue. I think what we learned from mobile phones is that an app store is way more worth than the best hardware you can get. So that's basically Nokia, no app store, and iPhone and so on, put an app store and you can basically change the functionality of your phone on the go. And that's basically what designers of wearable at the moment do not make. They provide one hardware piece that's linked to one software piece with one functionality. And that basically does not scale yet. It does not provide enough benefit for the user to basically buy that expensive piece of hardware.
It seems there are then two different ways. One is you mentioned something like the shoes or the fitness tracker that provide a very, very narrow functionality. And for them to be successful, they have to be super cheap. like, I don't know, 5 euros or 1 euro, and then I have a smart shoe, or it's integrated in every shoe, and every shoe would cost just 1 euro more, and then this might be acceptable. But to, in order to, and then the other direction is you have devices that provide more functionality and they can be cheaper, but we don't really know what kind of functionality that would be.
Yeah, and I think let's stick to the shoe example. At the moment, people buy that because it's cool, not because they have a real benefit from it. And that works for a small amount of time, and then everyone who buys it because it's cool got one, and then that's it. And then the device needs to get cheaper, and that's what you currently see with the first generation of fitness trackers. So I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, you paid like $100 for that. Now you get it for $5. And I think that's something, yeah, that needs to happen with smart shirts as well. But yeah, I think it's more tricky there because we really do not know how to produce smart textiles on scale.
Why is that so?
Because textile fabrication is extremely cheap. So if you buy a shirt or something, it's probably a couple of cents that's cost in production. And the microchips on its own, even if you produce them for non-textile version, they cost more. And then if you want to make it into smart textile, you have to have more requirements, right? Fulfill more requirements, like it needs to be washable, it needs to be bendable, it needs to be, yeah, very good integrated, because if some connection breaks, it's useless. And that requires, yeah, more precision than producing simple textiles. And different skills, of course. And you need to find someone who has both skills and can put them together. And that's, I think, the challenge.
But is that the general idea to like revise clothes, like pants, I don't know, shirts, these things? Maybe that is its own device class. I mean, maybe that would be something, because they all have in common that I probably don't want to interact with them. And I want to exchange them typically. Mm-hmm. I mean, the jacket by Google that you mentioned, that's different again. It also doesn't seem very successful to me.
No, it's not. Is it that different? I mean, it's basically another input to your phone. Mm. It's like a sensor, an external one. And
there's this whole movement of life hackers. Or life loggers who try to, you know, kind of measure everything mm-hmm. that you can kind of get your hands on in terms of data, not just the interaction with their devices, but also that you mentioned heart rate, maybe also how much they sweat, what they eat, what kind of experiences. And so if we kind of think about just a way of implicitly collecting data as we go about our lives, rather than this notion of, oh, this is just another explicit interaction device. What do you think this is going to go? Or is there a killer app maybe more in the actual data that we can collect rather than in the interaction that we can, or the experience that we can create?
I'm not sure if it's a killer app because, the number of people who are interested in that is quite limited, I would say. And I think the data itself, that's the interesting part. And everyone has his or her own application that they would like to see on that. I don't know. Some just want to collect it and get an overview of the change. Some want to measure their sports performance, diet performance, whatsoever. And I think it's really the variety of applications that's really the important aspect here.
I mean, there's some people that for them it might be a killer app. Like if I have heart problems, then
yeah.
Then it might actually, it might help me to survive, right?
Yeah, or the general, I mean, my health in general, right? That's a killer app. If I know there's a way of just collecting enough data to do preventive medicine, and to kind of like collect enough data so that pathologies become apparent before I see any symptoms. That sounds like a collab to me, not necessarily one that I like, oh, I need, you know, I need to buy this to get X. But if you can show that, you know, people who collect their data consistently have a longer lifespan, or, you know, get better healthcare services because they can be tailored more towards their needs.
So in Germany, fitness trackers were subsidized by health insurance companies. At least it happened. I think that goes into that direction.
As always in life, right? It's definitely a good idea, but it's expensive. So every piece of clothing you buy needs to be smart in order for that to work.
And there is no price on your health.
Oh, yeah. It's fairly simple. You can calculate how much your life is worth in the end. Go to an insurance company, they will tell you.
They will, yeah.
And then there's the wearables. I mean, you get perhaps 5 more years on average or something, or 1 more year, and then see how much you have to spend for that. And then it's fairly clear it doesn't work at the moment.
I think that's also interesting from a maybe privacy perspective. Imagine your health insurance subsidized your fitness tracker, collects the data, and then you have to pay less if you act healthy. And I could imagine that building similar use cases for my desktop computer, so yeah, then it wouldn't be a problem, right? Because I can easily trick the system, then interacting with my desktop computer doesn't tell too much about my health, I would guess. But if that would end up on wearables, that sounds kind of creepy.
The data you can get through wearables is more sensitive than the data you can get from a mobile phone. And that's why different entities might be interested in the data. For example, your health insurance might be interested if you really do enough sports, and if you really eat healthy, there are things you can track with your wearable devices, right? And they could potentially misuse that and kick everyone out who is unhealthy, because it doesn't make sense from a financial perspective to keep the risk of paying an expensive surgery. And it's unclear whether it works, because what you saw is that people tricked their fitness trackers already. So they put it on their dogs when they went for a walk, which triples the distance they walk basically a day. And it was fairly easy and straightforward hack. And I would assume that people would do that if insurance companies would exploit the data.
Maybe the general problem is if the data goes out of the device. At the moment, most data goes out of our devices. That's also true for smartphones. So that's not special for wearable devices. But my impression is for other form factors, it might be fixable. So when I do things on my computer, a lot of the stuff is local. But if I do things on a wearable computer, it might be more challenging because of the lack of computing power and the lack of interaction.
Yeah, you have to transfer it somewhere, and then it's fairly easy to transfer it even further, right? Yeah. But I think that's something, we as a society need to take care of, that we basically put rules in there that prevent people from doing that. I think it's otherwise not fixable, because you cannot trust companies in the end, because information is not cheap. So it makes sense for them to gather everything they could.
If I recall correctly, it's not just about the data collection, right? That might be sensitive. You are one of the pioneers, it seems, on electrical muscle stimulation. And I believe you put that also directly on the skin, which could be considered wearable. Mm-hmm. And I've seen more research in that field. So basically, you're controlling human motion.
Yeah, and that's again something where you require trust in the end. You need to trust the system and not exploit that for something bad.
So what have you been doing in that field?
One of the projects we did is basically creating a navigation system that does not require a lot of cognitive load and steers you to the destination you want to go to. And that obviously can be easily exploited, that, I don't know, a shop on one way pays 50 cents if people walk that way and not the other way, although it's not the shortest one. And they might sort of make more revenue because of that, because more people pass by the shop.
Isn't that what GPS devices already do?
Yeah, they could do that, but GPS devices mainly show you the way in advance, and you can say, oh no, the other way looks shorter, better, I take this one. And if you do it in a wearable way with electrical muscle stimulation, the idea is that you basically don't know where you go, but you just know that in the end you will be there where you want to go, right?
So how does that work? I just put your tech on, and then I'm being shocked to my destination, or shocked, what do you? Yeah.
No, it basically jumps in between the signal generated from the brain and sent to the muscle, and basically replicates such a signal, and then muscles get actuated. And it's obviously very limited what you can do, because you can just reach the muscles on the surface and so on. So it's very limited set of activations you can get there. And as soon as the muscles get the signal, they just contract. And it's the same as, so the muscles do not differentiate between signals from the brain and signals from an EMS device.
So could your device teach me how to dance tango?
In theory, something similar could be possible. I'm not sure if you teaching dancing tango is possible, but because not because of you, of course, but because of it involves a lot of muscles in your body. Uh-huh. And most of the muscles cannot be actuated. It's more like
a lot of shocking.
Yeah. So what we did is we did a study on playing mini golf. Uh-huh. And that was basically slightly doable, because we can change the direction the club is held by the user. We can change that and we can control that. And if we have a tracking system and a feedback loop, we can basically make people play better golf. Tango, on the other hand, involves hundreds of muscles and sort of, a very fine-grained control of all of them.
Could you make them vote differently by shifting their pen from the sheet that they're supposed
to be? There is work on shifting pens, but I think voting requires a visual part that might be overriding the EMS part. And that's also an interesting thing. All the EMS studies, that's always something people can override if they want to. So they will not be forced into doing something they really don't want to. But if they trust the system and don't care for what's happening, then something like that could happen, of course.
Mm-hmm. But that seems to lead to a closer integration of humans and machines. So at the moment, I can still override it, or I can deliberately say what the device is doing. But I would assume that in the future, maybe more power is given to the computer. Is that something you're working on?
I'm not working on that, because I think it's more in the direction of implantables. So if you implant electrodes close to the muscle, I would assume that overriding is not that easy anymore, because now the current goes through different levels of the skin and so on, which basically makes the signal quite weak. And so the way we use it is still overridable, but if you have some implantables, that might perhaps not be possible anymore.
Will that create a cyborg in the future? Will we all become cyborgs?
I would assume military works on that, because it's very easy that if a soldier gets wounded, just make them stand up and walk back. That saves a lot of money in the end. So I would say it's very interesting from a military perspective. I'm not sure if that's something in the private life we really should strive for.
One of our students here, graduate researchers at Melbourne Uni, Kyla, she looks at insertables and the type of augmentations people do by implanting, let's say, magnetic devices or an RFID chip under their skin, and use that, for the subway or just to move objects almost telekinetically. But it seems to be more of a the margin audience that is interested in those kind of augmentations. But what would be augmentations that would be worthwhile implementing on a grander scale?
So there are wearables that are used for that, right? I mean, hearing devices, for example. That's typically augmenting the hearing capabilities of users, and it works on a big scale and is well accepted by the users. I think as soon as it provides enough benefits, people are fine with it. Pacemakers, for example.
What about tapping into the brain then? So we can add things to the body, hearing devices, pacemakers. And I think there are stimulators for the brain that do similar things if you have certain diseases and they can help you. Can they also help the general public, like making me smarter?
I think for that, we have to understand the brain first, which is something we simply don't do. I think the vision is clear, something like the Matrix, that you just put some information or want to read that book, put it in your head, and you have all the knowledge. I'm not sure if it's possible. I'm not sure if it's desirable, but I think if it's possible at some point, people will do it. I mean, it gives you, of course, an advantage.
Well, I know at least one does it. There's Elon Musk. He has this company called Neuralink, and they're actually trying to implant the technology right underneath the skull to not just sense EEG signals, but actually also manipulate the signals being passed through the neurons.
Yeah, but I think from that step to really putting knowledge in your head, it's more than one step. I think it's a couple of steps that needs to be taken first.
But something that might appear sooner is, like said Stana, I think his vision is that the time you need to access the device becomes shorter and shorter, and that from desktop, mobile phone to glasses. And then, I mean, the obvious next step would be something that you implant next to your brain, and then it might still be explicit interaction. But so I couldn't download books into my brain, but I could ask, oh, give me that Wikipedia article and make me read it.
What if you just manipulated the perception? If you just made people awake all the time, and then they could just take in more information or store it more rich in a rich context.
I think that's obviously one of the big challenges everyone would like to face, but in the end, it's really questionable if we can manipulate humans in that way, because we have many years of evolution, and we couldn't make it close to that, right? It's not very close. We did not advance a lot from 1,000 years ago. And now having the step of really jumping into a time where you can, for example, being awake 24/7, I think that's in the 70s, I would say. A lot of companies and secret services did experiments on that, but it's...
And it's a question if you want that. I kind of doubt that for a lot of these things that I would want that. The use cases doesn't always seem so positive.
Staying awake without being tired, that would be great if there are no drawbacks, right? I mean, what's the drawback? What's the advantage of sleeping? There is none, right? But just tackles the drawback staying up has. But I think it's simply not that easy.
I mean, we do see drug abuse in some student populations, right? Where anxiety leads to the ingestion of certain substances that help focus, help staying awake and all these, and they're being used.
And there are drawbacks in the end, right?
But maybe there is a compromise, a fine line where you can ingest just enough to be at your optimal level without compromising too much on your long-term prospect to survive this deadly life of ours.
Maybe that's an opportunity. So you combine wearable computing with drug abuse, and then the wearable inserts the drug, the right amount of drug at the right time, prevents your heart attacks that you would otherwise get. Yeah, maybe drug abuse is something. The computing community.
Well, that's literally what an insulin pump does, right?
Yeah. And I think they're on the transition. They're viable today, and they will be implanted in the near future.
So you get like a little wearable device. So you get implanted, and it has all the drugs that you can imagine. But then it holds them back and just releases them whenever you know it feels like doing so. Meanwhile, you have this big potential of just being completely drugged out of your mind at any point in time, which is kind of exciting.
Yeah, and I think there's quite some science fiction about that looks into that. And then you can say, you either do it explicitly or the device just pumps it into your body to optimize you.
Yeah, I find it interesting. There's this whole, you know, cyberpunk or cyborgs notion has been around for decades. You know, if you think about Blade Runner and all the previous, the genre that evolved from that. I just recently heard a talk by Pedro about computer human integration and how we're kind of like going back into that direction from, you know, mainframe computers, personal computers, wearable computers, computers in the environment, and now computers that we put on our body, in our body, right? And so really we're just returning to what the science fiction has prophesizing decades ago. And maybe we're going to see some of those applications actually come to life. You mentioned military research is probably on top of that. One of our colleagues has done research, I think, on extending vision using thermal cameras. So Yomna, she did this. What if we could see heat waves? And how would that change the applications that we can run, for example, in firefighting situations? Or I think you had a security paper on can we detect surfaces that have been touched before?
So we had a paper on identifying people with thermal cameras, because you can basically see more information on the user, right? You can see where your veins are and can use that as a sort of biometric. I think it's great to do research in that direction, but in the end, it's really the question if it's still doable. Of course, technological advancement helps, but not sure if we are there yet, or if it's just another wave of concept prototypes that might not work.
Does any of you have an example of things that you're working on which are more short-term useful?
Well, we just had a very up-to-date, actually, work on using EMG, or basically the signals that your muscles create when you move them, to detect hand washing motion. So hand washing literally being one of them, the absence of good hand washing practices being one of the most deadly, actually, reasons in hospitals for infections. And because doctors, nurses, also patients, right, they exchange a lot of germs and fluids and stuff. And so hand washing procedures are quite strict, but not always adhered to. And so we put like two myobands on the upper arm, and then detected when people were actually doing these from the different motions that are recommended from the World Health Organizations to properly wash your hands, even before those happy birthday songs were recommended to the public to enforce a 30-second hand washing procedure. And so you can do that with wearable sensing, I guess, and to monitor people's compliance with certain hand washing regulations, I guess. So this was worked by one of our PhD students, Chao Fang.
Stefan, do you also have something where you would say, oh, this is not as creepy as most things?
So I think, although you're not a big fan of the EMS applications, I think it's not that far out, at least when you look into the simple examples. So for example, we looked into how you can prevent users with VR devices to punch a wall. And I think that's quite straightforward. It might be doable. There might be like some band you put on your arm, and then it basically puts the arm back if you're hitting a wall. I think something like that, I can imagine that's doable in the next 5 years.
I mean, we see a lot of commercial devices, right? That like Google Glass, for example, but there's also this Japanese manufacturer, like Jin's Meme, who basically they put 3 EOG sensors in the bridge, and therefore they can track eye movements. So basically whenever you use the move your cornea, it changes the electrical potential, and that can be picked up. And one of the works we did with Ben, he actually looked at, can we use that to detect eye blinks and how long the eye blinks are in order to figure out whether a person is getting tired, right? So basically alertness measures that your glasses can monitor in order to say, hey, maybe it's time to get that coffee or take a break from your long drive or, you know, refrain from, you know, activities that are a bit more on the dangerous side of things where you want to be awake.
So, but one challenge you always have there is like the noise. I mean, if you do a study in the lab, it might work properly, but if you put it out, there's a lot of noise that basically ruins your data. Have you some experience about that?
Yeah, so this particular study was actually done in the wild. And it was a 2-week study where we collected the eye movement data and had a ground truth collected by the kind of like a reaction time task. Once in a while, the people were kind of like reacting to a stimulus, and that reaction, you can see that how reaction times go up. So basically people get slower throughout the day as they get more tired. And then we could actually correlate that with the frequency and the duration of blinks. And that worked in the wild. You need a lot more data, right? Because as you said, it's very noisy. Especially glasses that also shift position. And so you can accommodate that by having more data sets available and not just the 10 minutes in the lab.
That's probably a general problem with wearable computers. I mean, you don't have these problems on more traditional computers, I would guess, but that's basically because of the use cases. I mean, you wouldn't try to figure out if I'm tired or not using my desktop computer, because I don't use my desktop computer that often that this would make too much sense, I would guess. But on a wearable, it makes a lot of sense, and it's imaginable that you can do that, but then it's still super challenging. But maybe that tends to, if you do wearable computing, you need just larger data sets, and you always have this uncertainty that you cannot be 100% sure if what I detect is really what I want to detect.
And I think what people in the mid-90s did when they first explored wearable computing, they really used it 24/7, the devices, on their own. And that's what currently is not really happening. And I think that's really, creates a lot of devices that are in theory pretty good, but practical-wise do not work. And I think that's really what people did better before.
Well, I think it comes back to the use case, right? So if you have a group of people who benefits from that, so for example, heart failure, a chronic heart failure condition, I think the Apple Watch now has as a way of detecting atrial fibrillation. So basically the disturbances in heart rhythm, and then you can kind of, you can prevent a heart attack from a cardiac arrest from happening by picking up, there are irregularities in your atrial fibrillation, basically. And I in my flowery future, I actually do see inevitable, really, that everyone at some point will wear some kind of device that measures what's going on in our bodies, which is really the great unknown. To customize, you know, not just your exercise regime, but also your nutrition, right? But also, and then also kind of like schedule your day in a much more friendly way, let's say, right? Everyone has their own inner clock, which we completely violate when we, you know, socialize after, you know, 10 p.m. or we go drinking or we fly through different time zones and such. And so it's always amazing. I think there will be a time where we will look at today and say, it's amazing how little we knew about the reaction between certain foods and chemicals with our own body, and how ignorant we were about that because we didn't measure those and didn't optimize around those, yeah, more fortunate outcomes.
I don't think so. I don't believe that. I think we will not have wearable computers that do exactly that, and that we all will have that. I think it's just the transition. We're in the transition phase at the moment. So it makes sense to look into them because they basically implement use cases that in the future we will all use, but only at the point when it gets implanted into our bodies. I don't think that most people will, I don't know, put these things on for very, very small benefit because of all the hassle that it involves. But if you implant that into bodies, I think then this could solve a lot of problems. And then I don't have to care about it. If I take a shower, it's in my body. Whatever I do, it's in my body. I don't have to remember putting it on. I have dozens of t-shirts. If it's in my chest, then I don't have
to. But then it comes back to this agency notion, right? Where Stefan said, well, you might, it's not wearable until you actually have the agency to put it off, to kind of like say, okay, I don't want this collection, or there are certain, you know, moments where I just, you know, rather not being tracked.
I think people are afraid of that. If you look at what currently happens with Corona, and people are afraid that there are microchips and vaccines and so on. God, what happens when you really insert microchips into them, right? People will go crazy. I'm not sure if we, from society perspective, are there yet.
If it makes me 10% more efficient, then there will be people who use that. And if there are enough people that are 10% more efficient, then at one point, I think there's so much pressure that you have to do it, or you're an outsider. So you don't have to do it, but then you're strange, and you don't perform as well in society as other people.
But is that something we want from societal perspective? I mean, it's basically putting people who can afford that in a better position. And yep. Somehow unknown and unseen. And that's really the question, if we want that or not.
Right, but it could also be seen. So I completely buy that argument of it will increase the digital divide, at least for time being, right? People who can afford it will get it first. But the same happened with vaccination, right? If you think about how it became, it is in most countries, it's mandatory, it's really cheap, and it leads to kind of like everyone having access to it. So I can see those the benefits overshadowing all the disadvantages, especially if you think about the cost savings for healthcare system that can refocus its resources on preventive medicine rather than pathological, you know, kind of like fixing stuff. That might be, I mean, yeah, there will be this period in time where we need to cross that chasm. But eventually, you know, this could be something that if we as a society have a greater interest in implementing on a larger scale.
There are quite some challenges from an ethical perspective, right? And I think we should have a deeper look into that before it actually will hit us, or this wave of wearable computing, but then also implantables. Cool. Yeah. So that was a very interesting discussion. Many thanks to Stefan, first of all, to be with us today.
Thank you for